Hello and welcome to Good Business Pays Television, where we interview leaders from the world of payments, both in commercial organisations, public sector organisations and important industry associations. And today we're lucky to have with us Jamie Radford, who is the founder and CEO of the AP Association. Welcome to you, Jamie.
Thank you, Terry, and thank you for having me on your TV channel.
Brilliant. Now, I know you are the founder as well as the CEO of the AP Association. How did it all get started and what's been your journey?
Well, look, Terry, I'm not as old as I look or young as I look, whichever way you want to look at it. So way back when, you know, I've been in finance a long time, and the accounts payable industry didn't really have an industry or a sector or a profession. So in my many years as coming up through the ranks of being a purchase ledger right through and sort of getting sort of more qualified as I went through, I decided to create a group, a community for the accounts payable industry. And we started from that, a LinkedIn group. We were known way back when as the Accounts Payable Forum, and that still exists. And that group itself grew from a few hundred members. It grew within 2 to 3 years in the UK to 26,500 members, which was phenomenal growth. And when you have a group that grows that quickly, you know there's an industry, you know there's something there. So we decided to really look at what could we do, what was the core problems we were trying to address. And it came back to three things. It was all about trying to be part of a community. So we have a membership product. The second was they wanted to feel as though there was light at the end of their career tunnel. So we have courses, qualifications, and certification programs. And thirdly, they wanted to network. They wanted to get together. So we created an event schedule with a conference. So the evolution for 7-8 years ago, that LinkedIn group is now well over 50,000 members. We are, you know, delighted to have some of the largest organizations in the UK who are our members, who engage with us on lots of platforms. But the proud moment for me ultimately was we started that movement 7 or 8 years ago, and now we're very well known in an industry leading that payables profession, which is just such a super exciting role to do.
And these people are in the engine room, aren't they, of the world that I live in, which is sort of payments. And I know that's only one bit of what they do, but they really are the front line of payment culture, aren't they?
They are, Terry. And you and I, you know, we've worked together a number of years now. And the reality is it's that perception versus reality. The perception is that bigger organizations have all the money and they can make payments willy-nilly but sometimes decide not to. Actually, that's not the case. As you well know, and I know, they have really good people. They have processes which probably don't support as best they can. And they have sometimes systems that sort of work against them. But the culture is really important. And what you and I have been doing recently is to try and educate organizations and individuals about payment culture, about better payments. How can you make a difference to the small micro business and the small businesses? Because it's their living. And that's what we're on a mission to do with yourselves. So it's not all about the big payments that people make and the processes. It's about the culture as well. Do you want to do the best thing? We can always work out the other parts, the processes, the people as well. You know, people not approving invoices and all this stuff. That's a challenge in our industry, but we're on that. We're trying to make that. But working with yourself and your organization, Terry, has really opened our eyes to that cultural part as well.
And a lot of people who will view this, and this is like myself probably a couple of years ago, don't really understand how some of the jigsaw pieces in finance and procurement and AP fit together. And I know you've worked in all of these areas. So for the layperson, which might be a sort of senior executive thinking, well, where does this fit with that? How does finance and procurement and AP sort of fit together in a corporate jigsaw?
Well, let's take it back to the start. I mean, it's a great question, Terry. So let's take it right back to the beginning. You know, at some point, somebody in an organization wants to buy something, whether that's goods or service. So the normal case would be they go onto a system of some sort, choose a supplier and then buy goods. But in any organization, that bit's challenging. You can't really search for a pen. You know, you can't go onto your EIP or your commercial system and go, I want to buy a pen. So what normally happens is they then have to go and search the internet or go and source that pen. So when they're sourcing that pen, that's the start of that process. So they're effectively saying, okay, I want to buy something, a goods or service. Then that process kicks in. So they go and select a supplier. Let's say they select a pen supplier. Once that pen supplier is selected, the next stage is then is to effectively receive a quote for what you're trying to buy. And once that's acceptable and you're happy that, that's sort of the right price, the goods, the service, the level, and whatever you're looking for, you then enter into that start of the process internally of raising a requisition. Now, what a requisition is internally in a larger organization is that pre-approval to go and spend money. So that's where somebody in the organization has got some budget and they're saying, okay, you want to buy a pen, it's from this organization. They fit our supplier terms and who we want to work with, and the price and the goods and the service is okay. So that requisition then gets approved. That then goes back to the authorizer, the person who's wanting to order the pen. That person then ultimately goes and places that order with the supplier. And that order at that point is effectively a purchase order. And that's where the procurement and the accounts payable and the finance teams collaborate. Because that pre-stage, that requisition stage, if the supplier's not on their supplier list, the procurement team probably will get involved. They will ask a bunch of questions. There'll probably be a prerequisite set of questions. Do you adhere to all these? And then at the point where all that's good, then when the purchase order is issued, there's a supplier onboarding part. And that's where sometimes we can get tripped up because that process is quite manual, usually. It's quite lengthy because you've got to prove who you are, what you do, provide a lot of evidence of documents, etc. And that can be a full part of any part. So if you're a micro business and you're not sure why you're being asked to go into all these questions about what the questions mean, it's really important that part of the process is adhered to because that sets up the rest of the process. So once you complete that supplier form, that gets sent back to the organization. They then approve. The order's then issued financially, so you can then go and send the invoice in. And at that point, you should then deliver the goods or service. And once the goods or services are delivered, somebody then receives an invoice from the supplier to say, look, we followed your process. We've got the invoice. That then gets matched, hopefully, if it's an internal receipting mechanism. So somebody goes internally and says, did you receive the goods and service? Was it acceptable? Did it have a purchase order? Did it have a receipt? That three-way match allocates. And then once the invoice receives in accounts payable, they process it, they match it, they send it out for approval to the business unit, the person that's ultimately ordered those goods. They approve it, and hopefully, fingers crossed, all of that works, and then payment is made to the payment terms that you've signed up at the very early doors. And again, we'll probably go into that in a bit, Terry, but you need to make sure that the terms you think you're signing up to and the terms that the business have allocated you, they don't differ. So it's really important to start this process. And then at the back end of that, as long as everything's worked, the payment is made. If there's a dispute, obviously that's where statement reconciliations and what good sums come in too. And then procurement get involved again, where they look after the relationship of the supplier. So it's quite a lengthy process. It starts and finishes with the customer and the supplier and all the procurement team. But the crucial part is it's all at the beginning. Make sure you know what you're signing up to. Make sure you read the instructions and know the process you're adhering to and how and when you're going to get paid.
Really interesting. Well, I don't want to leave this subject because you're on a roll there with telling us about important things. So how do you make sure you sign up to the right things then and that you understand and remember that, I guess, as well?
And ask the questions, Terry. It all comes down to communication, you know, education, learning and communication. You know, if you're, if you want to go and win some big contract with some larger organization, great. And so should you. But the reality is you've got to get paid for that work that you've done or that service or those goods you've provided. So ask the questions early door. Don't worry and don't feel fearful that the person you're asking the question will think, oh, this person doesn't know what they're talking about. Why should we, you know, use this organization for goods or service? It's all at the start. Educate yourself, read the documentation, ask the questions to the person who sent you that document to make sure you fully understand. And then also, if you don't quite understand, you need a bit of training, there's organizations such as ours that you can go along to and download one of our videos on the best practice to review a contract, the best practice about how to get yourself boarded. And really importantly, and this is where I know you stand for, Terry, is make sure that you're aware of that length of that process, as well as the payment terms you're signing up to. Now, can you challenge the payment terms? Absolutely. You know, if somebody gives you standard payment terms, you can always challenge them to ask, see if they can be improved. But that's part of the process, isn't it? That's about the negotiation process. They may adhere, they may not want you to, but the reality is it starts with being is communicate, educate, and ask those questions really early doors.
And you've got resources on your website and in your association to help people understand that first, an important job. That's great.
Absolutely. So we have explainer videos, Terry. So we've got some visual display explainers about sort of the process I spoke about earlier and the key elements. But I promise you, go to the very beginning, work out. It's one thing about winning the work, the exercise of selling goods or service to larger businesses. The really important factor is just think about what you're signing up to. What is it and when are you going to get paid for that great service or product you've just sold?
So you create content at the association, not just for people who work in accounts payable, but in this case, I guess a small business or a business owner can look at that. I guess very often they are the accounts payable people themselves, as well as doing everything else. They can access your content too.
Absolutely. So we've, similar to you, we have an APTV, which is a TV channel. It's on YouTube. If you go and search the Accounts Payable Association on YouTube, there's 100 plus videos. Just search it, put the content search in, explain a video for supplier onboarding. That will come up with a video and hopefully that will help. And if it doesn't, reach out to us, reach out to my team and ask those questions. If you struggle, please, by all means, reach out to us.
And we will put the link into APTV down below when this goes up on Good Business Pay TV. So you can easily find that as well. That'll be good. Now, I know you've been heavily involved both personally but also professionally in the potential changes that are being talked about or discussed by the government in terms of the payment regulations that were brought in 2017. It's been a long trek through this last 12 months of discussions, but what is your sense around where that process is up to? And from a professional perspective, what do you hope will change or not change?
Yeah, look, Terry, it's been a long time coming, let's be honest. And I came into this sort of late sort of 2021-ish to offer support. So I've been working with yourself and Liz and a few others. And the reality is, you know, I'm on the front line. I speak to members all the time about larger businesses who make payments, who go through the challenges of going through processes. And you've got to make this as simple as possible. You've got people that are selling goods and services, sometimes micro and small businesses. And then you've got larger organizations that have sometimes complex processes and policies and systems that sort of work against them somewhat. Now, what I'm hoping from the new sort of the new procurement bill is that actually it starts to make it more words of one syllable. So rather than lots of noise and lots of words about all the good things that people profess to want to know and sort of educate themselves on, really go down and into the weeds. What does a small micro business person need to know? What is it that's going to help them to, you know, succeed in their business and get paid? And from a point of view of the larger businesses, what can they do to help support the smaller and the micro businesses to educate themselves? So a lot of the detail that I've seen so far that's sort of gone across is all good stuff. And it's making it a little easier to, you know, effectively put yourself forward for some, you know, public sector contracts and whatever it will be. But more importantly, stand back from it. You've got to start to look at the basics. Do people fundamentally understand what they're signing up for? Are they educated? Do the larger businesses want to support culturally and have the ability to make those changes? So there's elements that I think some of the new procurement bill will sort of help, but there's most of it comes back to those two organizations, a customer and a buyer. Are they both working and collaborating and expressing to one another the way this thing can work going forward?
And what changes do you think will come about for the AP community going forward? Because, I mean, I know that a lot of technology is coming into the world of making complicated and long processes faster and easier. You talked about that process a bit earlier on, that many different steps in it. What should technology do and what should humans be doing in this AP area in the future?
Look, yeah. I mean, people have been talking about technology, you know, taking people's jobs, you know, since the day I was a lad, you know, many, many years ago. The reality is there will always be people involved in these processes because they're relatively complex. They involve two-way conversations. So the new technologies coming in the AP space is absolutely about making some of the mundane tasks easier, more transparent, so they're less repetitive, so they go through, whether it's bots, automation, etc. But the reality is, and I stress this massively, Terry, that it starts with quality information at the start. You know, don't think that a great system will replace rubbish quality information that's fed in at the beginning. So that point that I mentioned earlier, when a micro or small business is engaging with a larger business, make sure you understand it's two-way. So the information that goes in, and I'm, you know, it's a TV channel, so I'm not going to use the explicit information I usually use, but rubbish in, rubbish out, that comes to mind. The reality is, get that correct. So there is lots of technology, and all the problem with technology is sometimes it just creates a bigger problem or creates a bigger problem sooner. So ultimately, what you've got to do is, like with any technology platform, whether it's small or large businesses, make sure you address all the process issues, make sure you're fully trained and educated everybody internally and externally that start at the beginning. It really does start with quality information that gets fed in, and then ultimately the systems accelerate that part, whatever system you're looking for. And the end goal, let's be honest, is that a supplier gets paid and a customer gets what they want, two happy parties, and that's the cultural bit that we talk about quite regularly.
So, yeah, and you and I have talked about and done double acts actually around payment culture to some of your presentations. And I want to talk a bit about payment culture and how it happens, because, you know, I spend a lot of time geekily looking at charts of payment terms of companies over quite a long period of time, actually, you know, so three, we've now got 5 years of solid data for more than 5,000 companies, and we can see culture playing out on a page. And I just wondered, from your experience, you know, there are some companies that pay really fast and they have very efficient systems, and it's part of their DNA to have a supplier relationship where payment is part of that fast paying relationship. There are others that are the opposite end of the scale. How does that happen?
Do you know what, Terry? I think what your data clearly provides evidence of is that if a company really wants to go and make difference in the payment world, so they really want to make changes, they want to try and break down those silos, they want to improve their processes, improve their systems, improve their training, they're capable of doing so. The challenge that every organization has is time and resource, and then money ultimately. So I think that, you know, the data you've shared with us many times at some of our updates is that there are companies that get it. They really do want to make that difference. And we've had proud members stand up in front of big conferences and proudly tell people where they've really improved their payment performance. So the legislative bit that we have to do, large organizations, of the payment reporting practices, it's one thing about reporting it. The second part is wanting to improve it. And that's where it comes down to, and I'm going to use that C-suite level, that term, you know, the executives of businesses have got to buy into this, ultimately, the cultural side. They really want to make sure that their businesses are known as fair trade. Not only that they're buying from fair trade suppliers, they're treating them in a fair and efficient manner as well. Because actually, you know, I've been in from the world of procurements. Procurements are always tarred with that brush of all they're there is to go and get negotiated deals, best value, whatever. Actually, it's all about relationships. So if you've got a relationship with a supplier and a customer, actually, wouldn't you want to pay them on time or ahead of time so you can improve, so they can then start to invest in infrastructure or new products or services? So it comes down to C-suite seeing the value about making payments on time or ahead of time, and then culturally putting that into that business. And I think that's where we see the slight difference, where you've got C-level individuals who get it, want to get involved, come and get your payment awards. Great. You know, let's start celebrating where organizations are getting it and making a proactive time to try and make a change.
So I think you're absolutely right about the C-suite. And I haven't found many C-suite executives that are sitting there plotting against small businesses, for example. But what I have found is C-suite executives that don't have any idea how bad their payment performance rates are and want to get better. If they're in that position, i.e. they're not a fast payer, for instance, but they suddenly find out that, crikey, I didn't know we were taking that long to pay suppliers. That's not the right thing to do. Who do they ask to fix the problem? And it's probably a general question, but how easy then is it to go for the AP team and the rest of the team to go fix that problem?
Yeah, great question. And again, I think taking that C-suite, I think you're right. There's a lot of execs that don't realize maybe how bad they are in terms of performance, but there's also a lot of execs don't realize how good they are. And that's yours and my challenge to go out and you know, go to them and tell them about whether they're good or whether there's some improvements they can make. Now, there's two key metrics they can measure. So there's one called the DPO, the days pays outstanding. Now, all organizations should be measuring that because that is a measure of how efficiently they're paying. And then there's the legislation part, which is sort of the payment reporting practices. So you've got one which measures the performance from an invoice receipting into your business to the day it gets paid. And you do that on average over every quarter, and then you report. And that's the data you grab hold of, Terry, and you then sort of showcase that. But the DPO, or the days paid outstanding, is an absolutely day-by-day measure of how you're performing. So a combination of both those measures should be then on the exec's KPI list, or you know, whatever the report they get from their transactional teams, to say, look, where are we? What's our standard terms of business? If we're on 30, 60 days, are we adhering to that to the entire supply chain? And if not, why not? Is it process? Is it people? Is it systems? What is it that's stopping us to achieve what we say we're going to do? And I think that's the message. Let's start with getting the C-suite to understand what they're saying they're going to do and what they actually do. But it comes back down to a little bit of data as well.
So DPO, day paid outstanding, am I right in thinking that's a sort of real-time snapshot view of how long they're taking to pay at the moment?
Yes.
Right? As opposed to what we look at when a company's hit the buffers, for instance, and, you know, like Tufnell's Parcel Express, and they've crashed the plane into the sea, we pulled the black box out, and we can see what happened before it crashed, but we're not in the position that the C-suite are that are there every month, every week at the board meetings. That's where that should be happening, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. So what for the future of the APA, you know, what is the next stage of the journey for the AP community, the AP association? What are your growth plans this year?
Yeah, great question. I mean, again, look, we've got our large conference coming up later this year. That conference has gone from strength to strength. Other than that little 2-3 years we had working from home, we've grown that community and we want to continue that journey. That story I told you earlier, Terry, about from a small community online to then shaping an industry, we're now a profession. And I'm proud to say that we've got qualifications. And what we're all about now is promoting that profession so that we are similar and along the same lines as all the other professional institutes that do a great job in the world of accountancy and procurement. We want to be up there with those industries, those professions, and that's what we're doing this year. So the conference is very much focused around the profession. What we're trying to do is then give the tools to our industry to allow them to do that with the qualifications. But we have things like our quality program, which does address payment, cultures, how your processing works. So we're really now trying to promote that APAQ or the quality program because we want C-suite organizations to get value from what they're doing so they can benchmark to make sure they're around the same level they think they are, but more importantly, continually to improve their performance in terms of payments and also their staff satisfaction. What are they doing? Are they keeping the culture right? Are they keeping the good people within their business? Because let's be honest, good people is exactly what makes a business succeed.
Yes. And last question, which, and I'll wrap into this because you know this area better than most, but A, is there anything else you think that is important we haven't talked about that you'd like to communicate? And B, what do you think Good Business Pays should be doing in the next year, 2 or 3, to try and make a positive change?
Two great questions, and I'll address the first one. So, you know, what can we do differently or what should we do more of? Let's start talking. Let's communicate. I'm a big fan of having platforms where micro and small businesses can then talk to larger businesses and vice versa. But remember, it's a two-way conversation. That, you know, let's do away with the blame culture. You know, I don't believe, I think you mentioned it earlier, Terry, I don't believe there's many organizations that go out of their way not to pay, but I think there's complexity that comes in. We need to have those more addressed conversations. As always, we're willing to bring the micros and the small businesses to the forums that we run. Come along and meet the larger people, the people that in the bigger organizations that go through these processes. So let's not stop there and just, you know, point the finger and have that blame where it's all one-sided. It's a two-way conversation. Educate yourself, come along. And what you guys can do, Terry, and sort of what you can do more of the same. But actually, it's organizations such as ours, the CICM community, the Small Business Commissioner Office. We should all be supporting you to get that message out. So actually, at some point, people believe it's the right thing to do. It becomes a second nature. It shouldn't be blamed on a process, a system, or whatever. Actually, it's fair. It's fair trade. So fair trade in the right way, which is not about buying it from, you know, selecting where the supplier lives, works, and the people that works for the, but it's a fair trade. So if you buy something, you expect to be paid in a fair way. So more of the same. We'll happily support you for forever and a day, Terry, because you have our support, because it actually it impacts our community, because they want to know they're trying to do the right thing and doing a good job. So please keep doing what you're doing.
And I have met many of your people that fit that bill completely. So Jamie Radford, founder and CEO of the AP Association, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Terry.